instead of giving you my comments this week, I decided that we're going to talk a little bit about an assorted couple of topics that are all pretty much related to one another, but it's a little bit of a assorted issue, so we'll keep it a little bit more of a tashmokta. Many people are going on vacation in the next couple of days, so there's one particular, there are many areas of halacha that questions come up with when one goes on vacation, but many of the common shailas that we get this time of the year revolve issues concerning tefillah b'tzibur. Since some of those sugyas happen to be the Daf Yomi of this past week, and it's probably on a lot of people's minds, and it's always a timely topic, and many shailas do come up, so let me just review a little bit about some of the basic issues related to tefillah b'tzibur, and touch a little bit on zmani tefillah. Again, many of the common issues that do arise, particularly during vacation time. So the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Brachos speaks in very strong terms about how important it is for a person to daven in a minyan, daven b'tzibur. The Gemara talks about, obviously, the lechetchila way of davening through the tzibur is literally davening with the tzibur itself. If for whatever reason a person can't literally make it to shul, so the Gemara does talk about there being to some degree an advantage of davening even in one's own home at the same time that the tzibur is davening. But clearly, lechetchila, one is supposed to daven in a minyan for multiple reasons. The reason that the Gemara, the beginning of Brachos, emphasizes is that tefillah of tzibur is usually going to be miskabla, is going to be accepted much more than a tefillah yachid. Doesn't mean that a private tefillah will never be accepted, but a person wants to raise his chances a little bit in Shemayim, so tefillah b'tzibur is, of course, better for that. Then, of course, there are certain parts of the davening that one cannot do unless one is b'tzibur, all the dvarim shebu kedusha, including baruch hu, kaddish kedusha, etc. So there are multiple halachic reasons why it is preferable for a person to daven tefillah b'tzibur. What if a person cannot, but a person finds themselves very, very far away from a minyan, how much is a person obligated to be moshe nefesh in order to daven in the minyan? So the Gemara doesn't speak about this explicitly. The Gemara talks about other kinds of things, other kinds of situations that arise about how far a person is obligated to be matriach himself, to bother himself, to fulfill obligations. And the post can assume that whatever that magic number is probably carries over to tefillah b'tzibur as well. So the shiur based on the Gemara in Masechet Tzach, the third parak, comes out to the distance of what's called the mil. The mil is a certain amount of distance. It translates in halach in terms of time. We assume it means about an 18-minute trip. The person is supposed to travel 18 minutes out of the way in order to make a tefillah b'tzibur. We have to, how do you calculate that? In the olden days, that was an 18-minute walk. The folks can say it would be an 18-minute drive because you have to take in parking and find a parking space and everything else. But the bottom line is the person is not obligated to spend more than 18 minutes in one direction in order to make a tefillah b'tzibur. I remember when I first lived in Paramus, so every once in a while I missed the last minyan in town. It was the only minyan town, it was a quarter to eight to Meir. So I was, from the first week when I moved there, so I made a simple calculation how long it takes me to drive to Bnei Rishon. Because unfortunately it was less than an 18-minute drive, so which meant that I became a chuyuf for many, many nights. That's the first time to get into the 10 o'clock Meir in Bnei Rishon. So a person is obligated to try to travel at least 18 minutes in order to dive into the Mitzvah. What if a person wants to set up a situation where it's just going to be practically impossible to dive into the Mitzvah? Let's go on a vacation where there's no minyan around. So, if davening a minyan would be an absolute chi of gomor, it would be like putting on tefillin, so then there's nothing to discuss. Obviously, you can't plan a vacation without that. But since davening a minyan is not an absolute chi of gomor, it's strongly recommended. It has a lot of milas and many things you can't do be yachid. But technically speaking, a person can't daven yachidah, so then it becomes one of those things we have to weigh into the greater picture. So, again, putting everything else into the equation, obviously, tefillin b'tzibur is an important component, an important factor in that equation. But if for whatever reason there are certain pressing conditions, then one could discuss the possibility maybe of actually not necessarily davening a tefillah b'tzibur. Should we make a distinction between days of Kriyas HaTorah and non-Kriyas HaTorah days? So this is a major machlokes in the poskim as to what exactly the obligation, the degree of obligation of the yachid of the individual is Kriyas HaTorah. So the Mishnah tells us in Masechet Megillah that Kriyas HaTorah is one of those mitzvot that can only be performed b'tzibur. You can only lain if you have a minyan. It's not 100% clear why that is so. The Mishnah tells us that Devarim Shebu Kedusha require a minyan. The Gemara derives that from Sukkim. It says, V'nigdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, Kodesh Baruch Hu's name is sanctified in the midst of Klal Yisrael. And Chazal learned that from the whole array of Sukkim. The B'soch b'nei Yisrael refers to 10 men, the idea of a minyan. So for Devarim Shebu Kedusha requires a minyan. To say Kaddish requires a minyan. To say Kedusha requires a minyan. To say Baruch Hu requires a minyan. But why do you require a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah? It doesn't say anything about Kriyas HaTorah being a Dover Shebu Kedusha. I can give a Gemara Shia, give a Halacha Shia without a minyan. So why do I need a minyan dafka for Kriyas HaTorah? So it's a little bit unclear. So the Ran in Maseches Megillah suggests that Kriyas Seter per se doesn't really require a minyan, but the Baruch Hu that precedes it does. And since the Chazal will misakin, the Kriyas Seter has to be preceded with Baruch Hu, and Baruch Hu is a Davar Shebekedusha, therefore, by default, Kriyas Seter requires a minyan. So it's not that there's anything per se about Kriyas Seter requiring a minyan, but Kriyas Seter requires a minyan only because it has Baruch Hu as part of it. So there are others who perhaps suggest a different reason. So Veitch's suggestion that maybe the reason for a minyan for Kriyas Seter is based on something totally different. That maybe the reason why we require a minyan for laning is because the original laning, the original Kriyas Seter, was done by Moshe Rabbeinu, the Klal Yisrael, who would give him a series of psukim, and he would gather the Jewish people together, and he would present to them the psukim in the Chumash. So he basically was korei from the Sefer Torah, lifnei b'nei Yisrael. He would speak the words of the psukim to b'nei Yisrael as a minyan. They're very big minyan. He goes down to people. It's a big minyan. And the Rav said that maybe when Chazal instituted Kriyas Seter, it's patterned after that original gathering of Klal Yisrael together, and therefore requires a minyan. That's what the Rav explained, a very, very cryptic Rambam, based on the Gemara Maseches Melachos, and Maseches Basra. The Rambam claims that the last eight psukim of Chumash don't require a minyan. When the psukim describe the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara has a strange phrase. The Gemara says, Yachid Kerei Asan. The individual can read these psukim. It's not clear what that means, an individual can read those psukim. So the Rambam took the Gemara to mean that you don't need a minyan for the last eight psukim of Chumash. Why not? But Sukkot's Torah, everybody else is still at the Kiddush, so if the guy wants to go start Chasson Torah without having a minyan, that's okay, says the Rav. I'm like, Mehecha Teisek, why are you allowed to jump and read the last eight psukim without a minyan? So the Rav explained, because the last eight psukim, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't gather anybody together to read, because he was not going to read publicly about his death. Gemara has a Mechlekes HaTanoim, who wrote those last eight psukim into the first Sefer Torah? Every single word of the Torah was given from the Kiddush Baruch, the Moshe Rabbeinu, from the Beis Breishis, to the Lamed of Leinei Kol Yisrael. So the Kol HaTakul was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai, and then Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the entire Sefer Torah. Not only was he dictated the Sefer Torah, but then he went ahead and he wrote the Sefer Torah. The Gemara has a machlokes whether the last eight psukim was actually written in Moshe Rabbeinu's hand, or those last eight psukim were handed over to Yeshua to put into that original Sefer Torah. So everybody agrees that the last eight psukim are Torah, everyone agrees with the Shema, everyone agrees that the same conditions are Torah as the rest of the Torah. That was never a question. The question is, in that very first Sefer Torah, who put the ink on the parchment of those last eight psukim? Mark quotes one opinion that says that Yeshua did it, because the psukim described the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. It would be pretty funny for Moshe Rabbeinu to write, "Vayavasha Moshe ben Hashem," and he's still alive. And the other time it says, no, that Moshe Rabbeinu was given those psukim in Nevuah, and he was able to write it, even though it hadn't technically, in Olam Hazeh, it hadn't yet occurred. So that's a textual machlokes HaTanoim. But the Rav explained that everybody agrees, even if the older Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, he didn't gather the troops together and read it. It would be very silly for him to get up and say, Klai Yisrael, let me give the last year. Vayomashah Moshe Eved Hashem. A joke. He's still alive. But he said, Vayomashah Moshe. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say those last psukim publicly to Klai Yisrael. That's what the Rav suggested. That's the reason why maybe you don't need a minyan for Kriyas Torah. Because if the whole minyan for Kriyas Torah is Ke'ein, the first Kriyas Torah, those are the only parts of the Chumash that were actually not done in the presence of Klai Yisrael. So again, we're not sure exactly why you need a minyan for Kriyas Seter, but the Mishnah says you do. So under no circumstances can you lay without a minyan. So now there's a further question. What does that mean, that I as an individual can't lay without a minyan? We have 10 people in shul, we have to lay. So the Ramban, in the beginning of the Maseches Megillah, seems to say that Kriyas Seter is not a personal obligation. It is different than Kriyas Megillah. Kriyas Megillah, every single person has to hear the Megillah, read the Megillah, hear the Megillah. Kriyas Seter, it's not my personal obligation to lay. It's not your personal obligation to lay. When 10 Jews come together in Davin on a Shabbos, Yom Tov, a Shabbos, Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, whatever it is, whenever it's the time of Kriyas Seter, so they have a Chavis at Tzibor, they have a communal obligation to have a Kriyas Seter. But Moshe, there are many, many mitzvahs in the Torah that are personal obligations, and there are many mitzvahs that are communal obligations. Say, for example, putting on tefillin, that's my personal obligation. Eating mass, that's my personal obligation. Bringing a korban tomid in the Beit HaMikdash every day, that's a communal obligation. Appointing a king, that's a communal obligation. So you have chobas ha-yochid and chobas ha-tziburs. So when Chazal instituted the mitzvah of Kriyas Torah, according to the Ramban, they instituted it as a chobas ha-tzibur. That's a tzibur klal Yisrael. The microcosm of klal Yisrael, 10 Jews, have to have a public reading of the Torah together. But it's not really a personal chiyuv. Therefore, let's say for whatever reason, I can't make it to shul today. But I'll make it to shul. Today's Thursday, I'm not going to make a Kriyas Torah. So what? So I won't make a Kriyas Torah. What's the big deal? It's no different missing davening on Thursday morning than it is missing on a Wednesday morning. That's what the Ramban should say. the Reb Chaim Brisk, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, had a different shot in the Ramban. Reb Chaim was very famous for proposing the second approach. He had the different approach. Reb Chaim claimed that Krisper is very much a Chayves HaYochid. It's a Chayves HaYochid that can only be performed in the context of the minyan, but nevertheless, it's still a Chayves HaYochid. It's a personal obligation. And therefore, if you missed Kriyas HaTorah, you better try to find a way to make up Kriyas HaTorah. Let's say a person has a choice between missing davening on Tuesday and then you're missing on Thursday. That's a huge difference. According to the simple reading of the Ramban, what's the difference? It's the same thing. Tuesday, Thursday, it's all the same thing. But according to Reb Chaim, so missing Thursday is a significantly more problem because you're going to miss your personal obligation of Kriyas HaTorah. How do we follow in this machlok, in this question? There are different opinions. The briskers are known being very, very machmir upon this. The briskers, Ariyam, is very, very machmir on this. The Rav, obviously that tradition, Reb Chaim, was very, very careful about this. It was very often the Rav would miss Kriyas HaTorah in the morning because he used to travel a lot. And the old years used to take the train from Boston to New York. In the later years, he would fly from Boston to New York. Sometimes the schedule would turn out that he would miss the Davi, miss the Shachris or something. So he would miss the Kriyas HaTorah. So if he ever ended up missing Kriyas HaTorah, if he came to the yeshiva a little later in the day, again, this predates my days in yeshiva, but they say that the Rav would get a shamasim to knock around on some of the dorm rooms and gather some talmidim together. And by 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he would still be able to find 10 people who hadn't yet heard Kriyas HaTorah, surprisingly, in the dorms. And he would put together for mincha, he put together Kriyas HaTorah, because he held that it's a personal obligation to Kriyas HaTorah. So there was a fascinating end of the story, the postscript to the story about the Rav. That, those who remember, the Rav was Nifter on Chol HaMoed Pesach, and his Levaya was in Boston on the last day of Chol HaMoed. Many people flew. The Sunday was the last day of Chol HaMoed. Yom Tov was that Sunday night. A lot of people flew to Boston for the Levaya. So myself included, we couldn't daven Shacharis in a minyan normally. We had to leave very early in the morning. We daven Shacharis in Hal and Mustafa on the plane, but we couldn't lane, obviously. So when we came back to New York, we came back later in the afternoon. I remember in Riverdale. So we arranged there should be a minyan for Mincha, about 15, 20 minutes before everybody else, and we would have a Kriyas HaTorah at Mincha, for that Kriyas HaTorah of Chol HaMoed that we missed that morning. So I remember at the time, we always said it was very apropos that many communities throughout the tri-state area were having these Mincha Minyanim, the Kriyas HaTorah, which is unheard of. So it was very appropriate tribute to the Rav, because he was the one who was so machmir all those years to make sure there was a minyan for Mincha in the Y dormitory at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So the day of his Leviah, so somehow that became the minig. This idea of people getting both the hits, getting all nervous about missing a Kriyas HaTorah, because they think it's the Chavos HaYochid, so this has created a whole series of shilas. This is an area of halacha that until recently was completely irrelevant to most people's schedules. We know that the way the calendar is set up every couple of years, so you run into this problem that the Kriyas HaTorah of Eretz Yisrael and Chutzlot are not in sync. Depending on whether either the last day of Pesach is on the Shabbos or if the second day of Shavuos is on the Shabbos. Last year we had it one way, and this year we have it the other way. So if you have a discrepancy in the calendar, for now the Bnei Eretz Yisrael get ahead a week in Kriyas HaTorah because it's the last day of Yom Tov, the second day of Shavuos. So for them it's a regular Shabbos, and they start laying the following week where we have tagging line of Chutzlot. So some years, depending on the quirks in the calendar, some years it's rectified in a couple of weeks, and some years it can go for months until it's actually fixed up. So until 20, 30 years ago, who cared? Whoever thought the Jews sitting in Poland, so whatever Parsha was in Poland, the 10 people who lived in Yerushalayim, they were learning a bit of a Parsha. Nobody knew, nobody cared, nobody had anything to do with each other. But the Zman Hazeh, people are flying back and forth, right and left. So a guy leaves Eretz Yisrael, he gets the Parsha twice, he leaves America, he missed the Parsha. People are missing Kriyas HaTorah right and left. So this started the whole process, the Zman Hazeh, that many people try that they have these minyanim that double up in Parshas. So this is very common. If you arrive at Eretz Yisrael like the week after Yom Tov or something, the world yeshiva bachur went on for Ben Azman, and so all of a sudden you see posted in Shalayim sign, come in here, Parshas, Tazriya Mitzach, and Mas Kedoshim, all at one shot. I remember when I was in Kembi Avna, so it came out that way. So they needed a Balkari to lay no force. So I laid no force. I got up and laid Tazriya Mitzach, and Mas Kedoshim. You have to wait a lot of, you have to do a lot of these kinds of wild scenarios. If people start missing Kriyas HaTorah, so people get so hits about missing Kriyas HaTorah because they're being concerned that maybe it's a Chayves HaYochid, so maybe it's a personal obligation that they have to hear Kriyas HaTorah. Is there any difference between the Kriyas HaTorah of Shabbos? If a person is going to miss a minyan, he's arranging his vacation, it's going to come out that he did end up missing Tzilu B'Tzibah on Shabbos. Is that worse than missing Tzilu B'Tzibah during the rest of the week? Is the laning on Shabbos any more serious than the laning of the rest of the week? So that's literally, that's tomorrow's Daf Yomi. So the Gemara discussed in the beginning of the second parak of Masechet Brachos, the Gemara talks about a discussion of Machlekes Rabbi Yehuda, Hanasi, and the Chachamim about whether you could say Kriya Shema in any other language or whether you have to say Dafke B'Loshon HaKodesh. Some mitzvahs have to be said Dafke in Hebrew and some mitzvahs can be said in any language. So it's not clear what the status of Kriya Shema is. So in the middle of that discussion, the Gemara starts to talk about what about Kol HaTorah Kula? What language is that given in? So what does that mean? What are the words? What do you mean Kol HaTorah Kula? So Rashi in the second Megillah, when the same sugya appears, Rashi says vis-a-vis Kriyas HaTorah. Rashi says it's important to know whether Kriyas HaTorah has to be Dafke B'Loshon HaKodesh or whether theoretically you could lay it in other languages. So the Rishon Mabar with that Rashi is that Kriyas HaTorah is only a mitzvah derabbanan. The Gemara seems to say explicitly that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted Kriyas HaTorah. It wasn't a din deraisa. But if it is Baruch who told Moshe Rabbeinu that's deraisa. Moshe Rabbeinu started on his own as a Beis Din, as a rabbi. Moshe was Rabbeinu. He was a rabbi also. He was also the recipient of Torah, and he was also the first of the Rabbanan. So Moshe Rabbeinu received the din deraisa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he instituted a series of din derabbanan on his own. The Gemara seems to say in Baba Kama that Kriyas HaTorah was instituted the days of Moshe Rabbeinu as a din derabbanan. So how could the Gemara in Brachas, which is talking about Shara v'Deraisa, how could the Gemara be talking about Inyan of Kriyas HaTorah? So there's a mitzvah in the second Megillah that explains that Kriyas HaTorah of Monday and Thursday is derabbanan. The Kriyas HaTorah of Shabbat and Yom Tov is Deraisa. And when Moshe Rabbeinu instituted Kriyas HaTorah every Monday and Thursday, but in the Torah, the Rosh himself dictated that you have to lay it on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Where does it say in Chumash you have to lay? We state in the Chumash with Abba Shem Hashem you have to lay. So the Ramban in Chumash in Parshas Emor writes that whenever the Torah refers to Shabbat and Yom Tov, those days are always called Mikra Kodesh. What does Mikra Kodesh mean? So the Ramban says the Pshuta Shemit, the literal meaning of Mikra Kodesh means that you have to be Kirei Berabim, Eva Kriya Eda. You have to have a public proclamation of Devarim Shiva Kedusha. Mikra Kodesh means you have to get everybody together and talk holy things. What are you supposed to talk about holy things in Shabbat? Divrei Torah. You can't get holier than Divrei Torah. So the Ramban says that to gather the troops together in Shul and to lay on Shabbos, that's a din deraisa. To gather everybody in Shul and lay on Yom Tov, that's a din deraisa. To lay on Monday or Thursday, that's Mishkatel. That's only a din derabbanan. So we come out according to that Ramban and that Rizvah, you should really, really try to schedule your trips in such a way that at least Shabbos you make it to a minyan. It's bad enough if you miss a minyan on Tuesday. And it's a little bit worse if you miss a minyan on Monday or Thursday. And it's even worse if you miss a minyan on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's the most important because you want to be able to have the tefillah and the Kriyas HaTorah and everything b'tzibur. According to some, that's even a chashayla of a bit of mitzvah deraisa if you're not going to have some kind of a tzibur kedusha together. So according to this Ramban and the Ritva, is that one of the mitzvahs hayom or Shabbos and Yom Tov is a Kriyas HaTorah. You have to learn, now again, mid-deraisa, you don't have to learn the whole parsha. The idea of splitting up the parshas and finishing up that's all mid-derabanan, but the idea of getting the tzibur together and having some kind of a Kriyas HaTorah, that would be a mid-deraisa. So tefillah b'tzibur is pretty important. Sometimes you run into conflicts about tefillah b'tzibur versus other halachas in terms of what was tefillah. That was also something very recently in the Daf Yomi. And that's the issue of Zmani HaTfila. This is also something that becomes it's a big issue at this time of year in general. It becomes even more complicated for people who go on trips. So inevitably, or upon them just to get the shilas, I'm going to the airport, I'm going here, I can't daven, what time should I daven? Yes, no. So how does all that play out in terms of early time to daven and together in the context of Tfila B'Tzibur? So there is a general sugya in the Poskim about when is the earliest time to daven, forgetting about people are not still, forget about trips or not. When is the earliest time for us to get out in Shachris? So the Mishnah tells us in Masechet Megillah that there are many, many mitzvahs in the Torah that have to be done by Yom. Let's say, for example, you have to blow shofar Yom Truah. You have to blow shofar the daytime. Well, kachta mechem ayem arishon, you have to take the lulav and esrog by Yom. You have to say hala by Yom. Many, many mitzvahs have to be done by Yom. When is the earliest time of Yom? So the Mishnah tells us that any mitzvah that's supposed to be done by Yom should not be performed until Netzach Hamah, until sunrise. But if it was done after dawn, which is significantly a lot of time before sunrise, well over an hour before sunrise, but the Eved, after the fact, the Mishnah said you would still be yaitzei the Mitzvah. What's found in Mishnah? The Rashi explains that mid-araisa, the day begins with Alos HaShachar. Once dawn, once the earliest light is visible in the east, even though the sun is nowhere near to be rising, mid-Torah, that's considered to be the beginning of the day. That's what the Gemara says in Brachas, the Beis of an Aleph. That the Alos HaShachar is the halachically beginning of the day. Elohat. But the Rabban and Chazal were concerned that if you let a person blow the shofar from Alos HaShachar, shake a lulav, say, how? If you let a person do all these things so early in the day, very often you're going to make a mistake. It's very, very hard to tell. If you're up tomorrow morning at around 6 o'clock or so, give or take when Alos HaShachar is, it's going to be very, very hard to tell whether it's Alos HaShachar. If it's a cloudy day for sure, it's going to be very, very hard to tell. So people are going to make a mistake. You're going to tell them you can blow the shofar at 6:11, and you end up blowing it at 6:10, which is going to be too early. Therefore, Midrabban and the Midrash HaKadosh that lechatchila you shouldn't do all the mitzvahs until Nate. Nate, the sun's already up. We're getting the sunrise. Even if you made a mistake and you made your group by 5 minutes, it's still going to be well after Alos HaShachar. So therefore, Midrabban and lechatchila you have to wait till Nate. But the Eved, you will still be yaitu the mitzvah even after Alos HaShachar. One of the things that is not mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah, but is implied in the Mishnah, is something that's very, very relevant to this time of the year, that when a woman is counting Shiva Nikiya, which is getting ready for the week before to go to the mikvah, so the halacha requires the Mishnah in the end of Masechet Zita, also Daf Yomi, just a couple of weeks ago. So the Mishnah says that when a woman is counting her 7 clean days, she's supposed to be check herself. She's supposed to bedikos. With the most Rishonim, lechatchila, she should do bedikos every day of the Shiva Nikiya. She's supposed to make an internal check every day. So Tosfos writes that internal check has to be done dafka by yom. That's what we assume halacha, but that internal check has to be done by yom. So what does yom mean? So lechatchila bedikah is supposed to be done after neitzachama. But the other, they were done before neitz, so it would probably still be good. If it's after Alos HaShachar, lechatchila should be done after neitz. So many women are not aware of this. Many women make a mistake, especially this time of year. Neitzachama tomorrow morning is 7:19. There are many women who, when the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, they wake up, the first thing they do before they forget is to do Bedika. She's getting up at 6:30. So she's doing a Bedika at 6:30 in the morning. That's way before Neitzachama. The evidence will be okay, but the Chachil, that's not right. Many women by 7:19, they're already on the train. They're halfway to work already. The women should get into the habit that when they're doing Bedika, they should be cognizant of what time sunrise is, because the Chachil, you're not supposed to do Bedika until after sun. Yeah, the evidence would still be good, probably. But the Chachil, the Bedika is supposed to be done after afternoon. So in the Mishnah lists all the things that have to be done after Nate, Lechatchila, one thing is conspicuously missing from the Mishnah, and that is Tefillah Shacharis. The Mishnah doesn't say anything about Shacharis. It says about a lot of other things. It doesn't mention davening Shacharis. So what do we make of that? So many poskim said, we make nothing of that. The Mishnah doesn't have to give every single mitzvah. The Mishnah says, it gives you a few in the chulei, and continue to list on your own. And other achrayim say no. Rabbi Achraim say that the Mishnah didn't mention Shacharis, there's a reason why it didn't mention Shacharis. And the reason is that the Shacharis does not have to be davened after Nate. It can even be davened after Alos HaShachar, even the Chetchila. Why is that? Because Shacharis is corresponding to the Korban Tomid, and the Korban Tomid in the Beit HaMikdash was actually brought before Nate. That they did not wait till sunrise to bring the Korban. The Beit HaMikdash, they trusted themselves, they were careful, and they knew to be able to bring the Korban at the right time. So they didn't have to observe this waiting till Nate. So just as in the Beit HaMikdash, they didn't have to wait for sunrise to bring the korban, so to an Ashul, there's no need to wait till Nate to daven Shacharis, even the Chachila. So that's one opinion in Boston. So many disagree with that. So the halacha is that the Chachila, we try not to rely on this, but if a person is stuck, so the Boston matters, if a person is a mashkim aderech, if a person is rushing to go on a trip, he has to get to work, many people today, if you tell a lot of people today they can't daven Shmoneh Esrei until 7:20, they would never get to work on time. It was called Mashke Maderech. The Mashke Maderech is permitted to daven even Lechatchila before the actual time is. But very often you have these situations where people want to know, are they really called the Mashke Maderech? And somebody just called me today that they have a flight tomorrow morning. So if they daven before they leave the house, so that's going to be before Nate. If they want to wait till Nate, they're going to have to daven at the airport. So that's a very, very tricky. You know, daven at the airport, even though I have davened at the airport many times in my life, but as we all know, anyone who's ever done that knows that it's not the most appropriate, not the most conducive place for davening. And so we always try to avoid davening airports when we don't have to. So I told the person that, technically speaking, they're what's called the Mashke Maderech. The person is the Mashke Maderech, so they were allowed even with Chachila to daven beforehand. And sometimes you have a situation where a person, on the one hand, doesn't want to daven too early, but doesn't want to daven later, and he wants to daven dafket by seeking. He wants to time his Shmoneh Esrei in such a way that he hits Shmoneh Esrei, he begins Shmoneh Esrei right at sunrise. So that's a wonderful thing to do. That's what the Gemara says at the beginning of the fourth parak of Masechet Brachos. That's a great thing to do. Gemara in the beginning of the first parak speaks about all the milos of davening Masechet. That's a wonderful thing to do. It's not the ikvanin, not mechuyv to, but it's a nice, beautiful hiddur to do that. So sometimes that kapeid, that hiddur of davening Masechet can sometimes run into a question of missing tefillah b'tzibur. If you're lucky and you have a Masechet in your town, that's great. But there's no Masechet minyan around, so which one takes precedence? Is it better to daven Masechet or is it better to daven tefillah b'tzibur? So there are different opinions about this. Many folks can have a compromise to say that if a person always davens a sikin, every single day davens a sikin, then he can keep up that practice even at the expense of tzil b'tzibah. But the guy's not so machmer on a sikin. He's only davens a sikin in the winter time and the sikin is 7:20. But in the summertime when it's 5:20, so somehow he's not so machmer on a sikin. He's not machmer on a sikin on Sunday mornings because he wants to oversleep. So he's machmer on a day. So the guy is not so committed to a sikin anyway. So then he feels no less forget about a sikin. He should try to daven in an inyan whenever he can. If for whatever reason a person really can't daven in an inyan, then if he ever daven a sikin, not so, at least that does have the added mile of davening. So again, these are some of the issues that relate in terms of the tefillah per se.
Is that, if you don't think every day, that will override the whole laning issues?
I mean, is that more of the whole laning input? You should not sure that's then go chop around your hood, go get laning later. There are other issues that relate to tefillah that also come up, particularly in the context of traveling. One of them is the issue of tefillah kederach, and the other is the issue of birchas hagomel. The Tzilas HaDerech is a Gemara in the year of the fourth parak of Mesechus Brachot. The Gemara tells us that Chazal instituted that when a person is a Holech HaDerech, they're supposed to have a special tefillah that concludes with the phrase, the Baruch Hashem Shemeh Tefillah. The Gemara describes a little bit about how far the trip has to be. It's not 100% clear how that all plays out with Zman Hazeh, because the Gemara speaks about traveling a certain distance at the end of the city limits, as cities very often blend one city into another. But it's not always 100% clear when one recites the Tzilas HaDerech. If one is going on a fairly long trip in a fairly isolated area, or if one is flying, something like that, then one should definitely be davening Tzilas HaDerech. Tzilas HaDerech is a funny kind of a tefillah, because you're not exactly sure what it really is in halacha, because it doesn't seem to be a regular bracha. Most brachas begin with the word bracha to Hashem. The Gemara is also in the second bracha, bracha coming around pretty soon. The Gemara talks about most brachas beginning with the words, the magic words of bracha to Hashem. And Tzilas HaDerech doesn't start off that way. The Tosfos throws their hands up, and Tosfos says that the reason why Tzilas HaDerech doesn't begin with Baruch Hashem, because it's not really a bracha, it's a bakasha. It's an ask the bracha for help, it's tefillah b'yalma, but it doesn't have the halachic status of a bracha, and therefore it's not bound by the regular rules of bracha. And other Rishonim say, no, it is a regular bracha, and therefore it should have started with Baruch Hashem. The only reason why it doesn't is because it's what's called the smucha l'chavetz. The Gemara says that brachas do not have to begin with Baruch Hashem if they follow on the heels of a previous bracha. Let's say, for example, Shmoneh Esrei. The first bracha starts with Baruch Hashem, but none of the others do. So we finish Magen Avram, and then we say, Akel HaKadosh, and then we say, Atachonin. We finish Atachonin, we say, Hashiveinu. Or let's say in benching, the exception of the last bracha for technical reasons. So you start off Baruch Hashem, you end the bracha, and then the next bracha does not start with Baruch Hashem, no bracha. It just starts with no bracha. Or the next bracha doesn't start with Baruch Hashem Rachimna, it just starts with Rachimna. So whatever bracha is following on the heels of the previous bracha, that's what's called the bracha smucha l'chavetah. So the Maharam in Rittenberg writes that Tzilas HaDerech is always a bracha smucha l'chavetah. Why is that? Because you have to make it a smucha l'chavetah. How do you do that? So he says you should take a bite of food, take a little bit of food. So you take a little bit of food, and then right after you finish eating, then you start saying it's Tzilas HaDerech, that makes it bracha smucha l'chavetah. So that's great, assuming that you have food. And if you don't have food, then you have to rely on Tzitzis. You have to say it. Last week, I flew somewhere on a Sefer Tevis. I had to fly to Florida for something. So when I got onto the plane, I was about to start to say Tzilas HaDerech. So my initial instinct was, let me find the candy, find the piece of cake, find something to make it, and find an apple to make a bracha. And I realized it's a tiny tzibur. It's kind of hard to do that. You have to rely on the ikra din. The ikra din is like this, so that you make the bracha even without it being Tzilas HaDerech. At the other end of the journey, after the journey is over, then many of our trips involved a question of Birchas HaGomel. That's the Gemara. In the end of Masechet Brachos, that's 2 months down the line for Daf Yomi. But the Gemara tells us that our Baruch Shechem Mahodes, 4 people are obligated to recite a Birchas HaGomel. Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that they survived this dangerous ordeal. One of the people is what's called Yerdei Hayam, somebody who traveled over an ocean. So this was a big machlokes poskim. How does that play out with Zman Hazeh? So the Rav was of the opinion that it doesn't really apply today. The oceans of Chazal, they were describing the guy going down the sea and shipwrecks and the boats capsizing, all kind of disasters. Today, Baruch Hashem, folks get on a plane, they fly fly over the Atlantic, 99.99% of the time it's uneventful, and except for stop here in Nova Scotia or in other places that sometimes happen, but otherwise things are pretty calm. So therefore, the Rav said he didn't think that that's called a Macham Sakana today, and therefore you would not recite the Birchas HaGomel. And then Moshe Feinstein had the exact opposite conclusion. Moshe said that he thought that just the very act of getting onto a plane is called a sakana. Why is it a sakana? Because even though the odds of anything going wrong are so small, but Rachman Litzlan, if something goes wrong, then the ramifications are very, very big. That's what Moshe said. that even though it could be that the statistics, chalila, for car accidents may be much, much higher than for plane crashes, but you could walk out of a car accident, you're most likely not going to walk out alive out of a plane crash. So therefore, Moshe said, just the mere getting into the air in a plane, that's called halachli amakam sakana, and you have to recite Birch the Gomel even if you don't cross over an ocean. If you fly from New York to Washington, D.C., you would have to recite the Birch the Gomel according to Moshe. According to the Rav, you could fly around the world 100 times, and there's no Birch the Gomel. And according to Moshe, you fly for 20 minutes from Teterboro to Newark, and you have to recite the Birch the Gomel, just the fact you're in the air. So many, many people have almost followed the somewhere in the middle. Somehow, many people have this compromise, Shita, that we don't fly next to Birch the Gomel every time we fly. On the other hand, when we fly over oceans, so somehow we consider that to be like the old takana, like a formal takana of Yod HaYom. So that's what most people follow today. Not everybody, but many people follow that practice. If they flew over an ocean, they fly to Europe, right? So whatever, so then they recite Birch the Gomel. First of all, to fly, they just kind of hug the coast a little bit. I don't know, that's called Yod HaYom. So you have to really, really cross over an ocean in order to be chayev to recite Birch the Gomel. When one recites Birch the Gomel, so there are didim that govern Birch the Gomel, supposed to be recited in the context of a minyan. It doesn't really have to be recited in the context of a Sefer Torah. There's a minig Yisrael to say it in the context of in the presence of a Sefer Torah. That's why it's become almost like connected to Kriyas HaTorah, but it really has nothing to do with Kriyas HaTorah. So some say because Sefer Torah is like the Makom Mizbech, this man is there. So the same way we go around, in Hoshana Rabbah, we walk around the Bima, the same way they used to walk around the Mizbech. So too, just as in the olden days, we're being a Kovin Toza, so we say the Birch the Gomel by the Sefer Torah. But it's not magic. For whatever reason, you don't have a Sefer Torah, so you can recite Birch the Gomel even without that. Generally speaking, Birch the Gomel is not supposed to be recited by children, and one does not recite Birch the Gomel on behalf of children either. Only recites Birch the Gomel for people who are chayav in this. Pashup Shad is that women are also chayavos in Birch the Gomel. Many communities have it that women don't recite Birch the Gomel for reasons of tzinius, but many communities have such a practice. Other communities have that women say it in a more tzanua fashion, maybe after about it's over on the corner, whatever, not literally, woman doesn't get up to the Sefer Torah and you belt out the Birch the Gomel. But some communities do it in a little bit more of a tzanua fashion. Most places that I've seen, even those places where the women recite the Birch the Gomel, it's usually not so fly. I haven't seen so many women who recite the Gomel every Shenev Chamish when they fly. That most women who recite the Gomel were sad after Cholim when they gave birth and they were sick or something, some out of the ordinary kind of event. But again, the Birch the Gomel that we're most familiar with, the Birch the Gomel of traveling, is a highly controversial Birch the Gomel altogether, and many people have that practice. So, again, some people are going to be going on some trips, some people are not going to go on trips, maybe you're going, you're not going, everyone should be well. Every day, somebody was once telling a certain Rav, they were trying to convince the Rav to go on vacation, tell him they should go on a trip, and they said to him, it says, Asher Tzmimi Derech, it says, happy the people who are traveling. So he said, it's true, but it also says, Asher Yashav Yisecha, so people stay home, also happy, everyone should be happy, everyone should be healthy, everyone should be... Okay. And we'll figure out by next week whether are we on for next week? What for next week? The oil is around next week? Some around, some not around. Okay, all right. Well, as of now.